So this morning, I would like to talk about creative engagement. And for me, in a way, this is talked as non-attachment, but personally, I don't like the term non-attachment, because it seems to say, I must not attach myself. Poof! I don't think it's very helpful in our context. Then you have more the idea of non-grasping, which I find more useful. But to me, again, non-grasping, you have this impression, I must not grasp. When actually, if you don't grasp, then you can creatively engage. And so that's why I like to talk more in terms of, in a way, creative engagement. But in order to do that, I also have to talk about non-grasping, because the two very much go together. So I think grasping sometimes is very obvious, but sometimes it is quite subtle. And that's why during the meditation I wanted you to be aware of the sounds, aware of the breath, aware of the feeling tone, and in a way knowing the contact. Because where does grasping happen? It happens when we come in contact with the sound, with a sensation, with a thought. And it at that moment that the grasping occurs. And so in terms of the meditation, it's very useful to become aware of, in a way, the contact, how we contact in many different ways. Because contact is also how do we relate to what we come in contact with. And so in a way, each time we come in contact, we have the opportunity to grasp or the opportunity to creatively engage. So I would say that it seems that for most people, there seems to be this, what I would call this sticky quality. You kind of, you know, something happen and choo, it's kind of like we are like Velcro, you know, things kind of, it's kind of a little tough. So, for example, one thing we grasp very easily is words. You know, somebody says something to you. Let's say, you know, I look at you really meaningfully. Like, I look at you really meaningfully and I say, you are all enlightened. And you say, ah, wah, 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 you know, I am enlightened. She said so, you know. I must start to teach because I'm enlightened. Or I look at you a little sternly. I look at you penetrating. You are stupid. What? She say I'm stupid? I'm not stupid. You know, she's stupid to say I'm stupid. And notice how, you know, what is a word? I mean, it's just kind of a few waves, you know. And it goes, it's gone. But we kind of, we stick to it. And then we kind of handle it very kind of tightly. So in a way, that's what I mean. So for me, non-grasping is actually encountering and engaging fully with the world in the moment. So it's not retreating from it at all, but really encountering, engaging fully and responding creatively. Because then we have the space to respond creatively. Because what happens? When we grasp what happens, I have to demonstrate it, and I hope the people at the back can see it, but I'll try to describe it. Let's say there is this object here, and let's say it's gold and diamond, so it's very precious, or it is the greatest truth in the universe, and I have got it. So because I have got it, it's precious, it is mine, okay? So I hold on to it, right? I do this with my hand. I hold tightly onto the object that is precious, that is mine. So if I do this for any length of time, what happens? Two things happen. I get a cramp in the arm. So in a way, when we grasp, as soon as we grasp, we create tension. But more than that, I think there is something which is worse than that. is actually, if I do this, I cannot use my hand. So in a way, I am stuck to what I am grasping at. I stop my potential by grasping. This is a very important thing to see. To me, this is what is very essential. So, what is the solution? There is two solutions first, and then I'll present mine. But the first two solutions is you can cut the hand. I mean, it's a little drastic, but it would work. You would not grasp anymore. And that's what I would call asceticism. Otherwise, you can get rid of the object. That's another solution. But the object has not asked to be grasped at. The object is not saying, come, come, stick to me. The object is not doing anything. We are the one who are doing the grasping. So personally, I would say that meditation, the meditative path, is learning to open our hand. So then the object can rest kind of lightly on the hand. It can be there, it can be gone. And that's what I call creative engagement. That you really know the object, you can use it, and then also there is freedom and space around it. So in a way, when we grasp, what happens? We grasp, and generally at that moment, we identify. This is I, me, mine. Then you solidify, then you magnify what you are grasping at, and then you are overwhelmed, and it's overwhelming. I think this is very important to see, that as soon as you grasp at something, you reduce yourself to it, and in reducing yourself to it, you make it very big. And then you cannot creatively engage. Then you are stuck. You feel often, when you grasp, you often feel paralyzed. You feel overwhelmed. You have a thought, you have a feeling, you have a situation. This is too much. And you feel paralyzed, you feel you cannot, in a way, creatively engage. And so, in a way, to see that when we grasp, we reduce our potential for creativity. We kind of, in a way, reduce ourselves, the whole of our being, to just one thing. And if we do this, then of course we cannot creatively respond, because our potential is totally kind of tightened. There's no place to go. So at that level, I think the meditation actually is a process of de-grasping, a process of releasing. I think this is very much what it is about. And that's why, of course, when we sit in meditation, if we don't have any great problem, then we just feel relatively calm, a little distracted. But what is interesting is that at the end of it, generally we feel like there is a certain release. And I think that's what then we can take in our daily life and start to be more spacious when we encounter whatever we encounter in the world, inside or outside. What we have to be very careful is that we grasp in what I would call a forward, positive way to things we like, but we do exactly the same thing to things we don't like. When we reject, the same thing happens with the grasping. So when you love something, you want it, you exaggerate it. And in the same way, when you don't like somebody, you exaggerate it again because of that process of grasping. If you have some problem at work with somebody in the office, it's not just at the moment they say something or do something, but that person is all the time in the world, in your head. It's kind of like you totally focus on them. I mean, this is total concentration. It's what I would call negative concentration. You see, kind of you everything they do, you see. You can be totally kind of obsessed by it. So we have to see that when we grasp, when we reject, there is the same power of tension and limitation and magnification. So creative engagement is to come in contact, to encounter differently, so that there is space in our experience, and so there is a possibility of choice, of potential, and of creativity. So what I like to do a little now is go through various things we grasp at. I am aware we grasp at a lot of things, but just I choose a few examples to try, and I want to show two different kind of contact. First, what I would call basic contact. Contact in our basic experience, which is what we hear, what we taste, what we smell, what we touch, what we think. This is a basic. And then I look more at other kind of grasping. Because I think that when we come in contact in our experience, the meditation kind of, in a way, I think, enable us over time to have the choice to grasp or not, because when you grasp, you also proliferate. So to grasp or not, to proliferate or not with what we come into contact and grasp at. So let's take a visual object. You know, you have eyes, you can see, you see something. So when you see something, what do you do? I mean, I don't know what you like, but sometimes, you know, you might, I don't know, like dresses or like computers, and look at when you pass in front of a shop window. See, there is a contact, and then there is this kind of, you know, watch it. It's very interesting. It's not saying that you cannot have things, but notice what happens. And I was on a long retreat, a 1 month retreat in the forest refuge just before it opened as a kind of a test run by teachers. And I took a job on that retreat to cut the vegetable in the morning. And I cannot eat peppers, capsicum in any form, red, blue, green, whatever, I cannot eat them. And so every day I would come into the kitchen at 8 o'clock, let's cut the vegetables, and there would be this mountain of peppers. You know, green, red, yellow, every day there was a mountain of peppers. And then, you see, I saw that I had the choice. I could see the peppers like clouds in the sky, just passing through, like kind of like, you know, my field of vision. So I would see them, I would handle them, they would pass through. Or I could be like a porcupine, you know, a porcupine which has kind of this, you know, and then you know, if I grasp, I would be like a porcupine, and then all these peppers would kind of stuck to the porcupine and then rot away. Which is not kind of, you know, I thought that's not such a good idea. So in a way, every day I was kind of creatively engaging with these peppers. Ah, here they come! And you know, they would just float by. That's what I mean. Can we see the thing, we encounter it, but we don't have that kind of grasping, that kind of tension around it. And there is something very interesting with visual object. We can see again certain form of grasping. A few years ago, we moved to France with Stephen, and we had to repair the house, and we needed a little staircase to go to the meditation room and his office. So I had this vision of this beautiful wooden golden staircase, very elegant. And we could not find a carpenter, and so finally we had a very ordinary, extremely uncomfortable staircase. And so whenever I went to meditate, I felt a little funny. And then after a while I looked, and actually I was seeing two staircases. There would be the one that was there, and there would be the other imagined one. And I would compare the two and feel, ugh. And it was interesting to me to see that sometimes we grasp at a visual object that is not there. I mean, that you grasp at something that is there, I think is fair enough. But that something that is not there, that is really something. So, you know, in noticing, do we do this? Do I have a parallel vision? And then kind of in a way put down what we encounter. And so as soon as I saw that, I just let go of the kind of the imagined one and then use the other one naturally. Then you have sounds. Sounds. How are we with sounds? And I find, in a way, the meditation there can really help us to not grasp at sound and make them overwhelming, but really to go inside the sound and really experience them as they are. Instead of this kind of grasping, we kind of really bring tension. So we move to this beautiful bucolic house in the countryside in France, ancient village, and we have a nice terrace. And in the summer, we like to be on the terrace, resting. And then, one summer, at 3 o'clock, every day, suddenly, we would have this huge, noisy, loud garage music. Boom, 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 boom. And, you know, and it was really, it became my practice. So, you know, it lasted about an hour or two. And I mean, after a while, I enjoyed it. You know, it was so different. You know, I kind of waited for it to start, waited for it to, I mean, you know, be with them when it finished. But in a way, I kind of creatively engaged with it. Instead of saying, I don't want it. You know, it was the neighbor, the farmer neighbor. He was a kind of the young guy. He was learning to be a DJ. So he kind of, and, you know, and it was just very interesting to use it as practice, kind of creatively engaging with sounds. Oh, you have smells. How are we with smells? Smell we like, smell we don't like. You know, how are you with it? Because this is again in this bucolic, again the farmer next door on the terrace, and about once a week the lady burns plastic rubbish. You know, and we kind of get this nice wafting smell of plastic rubbish burning. You know, and of course we try to kind of her not do it, but she can't not do it. And so again, this is, how can I be with this smell? How can I, in a way, creatively encounter it? How I creatively engage with it? And the same with perfume. I am allergic to perfume, and I travel a lot, and I love perfume. So I love when I'm in an airport, you know, and I feel, you know, like, you know, the duty-free counter. And then I know I can't try them out, because otherwise I'm kind of going to come in a rash. And so I can feel, and then just smell it. Just, you know, this kind of creatively, you know it, you experience it, but in a way you don't do anything with it. You not necessarily have to. So it's kind of having that freedom of choice. Or you have the taste, the tongue, the taste, when we eat. And that, I think, is something there we can really learn with taste about grasping an experience, is how we grasp at the newness of the experience. You know, you have a dish you love, like from, I was a nun in Korea for 10 years and I did not eat couscous, but I love couscous. And so I came back to France and, you know, I went to have some couscous and it was a fantastic experience. It was so tasty and everything. And of course, the next day I wanted to repeat the experience. So I go to the same restaurant, same time, and it was ordinary. And it was the same thing. And that's when I realized that actually often what we do is not, we don't just grasp at the taste, we grasp at the newness of the experience. But once you have an experience once, it cannot be new again. So in a way we grasp again, we try to kind of grasp at the newness, so we kind of again have to have this constant chase for this new taste, for this new experience. So in a way noticing that, because that I think is kind of adds something in a way to the grasping experience. Then there is tactile sensation. And that we can, I think, very much kind of play with it, experiment with it in meditation. Because you sit in meditation and your knee, ooh, my knee, it's painful, it's going to fall off, I'll never walk again, why did I come to do this meditation? You know? And what I found then is very interesting, instead of kind of again, me, my knee, to actually go into the sensation. to creatively engage in the sensation. And then we experience the discomfort in a very different way. I mean, it's still there, but there is not, in a way, that aggravation, that exaggeration. I think this is really what we have to see, that when we grasp, often, in a way, we set ourselves up to exaggerate either the pleasure of something or the pain of something, which stops us, in a way, to creatively engage with it as it is. Then there is, how do we encounter our thoughts? And to me, this is what is interesting. Thoughts. What are thoughts? I mean, thoughts are just a few firing of our neurons. I mean, they're amazing. We have all this electricity in the brain. I think this is fantastic. So we have all this kind of constant kind of firing. You know, that's what our thoughts are, this kind of little kind of electric current of various things coming and doing their thing. But sometimes we have a thought and we grasp at it, and this kind of very ephemeral thing actually paralyzes us. We totally kind of, we have a thought. I had this experience. I was in moving to France is bureaucratically very problematic, and I'm considered a migrant and everything like this. Anyway, so I was trying to get social kind of medical cover, which we have in France. And so I was, you know, 2 years I'm trying to get the papers and everything. And finally, I think I'm end of this. I go to see the woman. I show all my papers. And she look at me and she said, "Ah, madame, you need 2 more forms. Come back in 2 weeks. And I come out of the office and my thought is, I am hopeless. This is hopeless. And I feel paralyzed. I am paralyzed. I'm standing on the pavement in the way people have to kind of avoid me because I'm totally paralyzed in that moment. Because I grasp at just this one thought, I am hopeless. This is hopeless. And then the meditation kicked in and asked, well, you can read. You can write. I mean, you know, you can handle forms, you know? And there was this movement. There was really this movement from, in a way, hopelessness to, okay, I am a relatively able person. I can deal with forms. And now when I see a form, I think, ha, let's see this one, you know? And then I try to creatively engage with it instead of having this tension, I can't do this. So to see how by grasping at the thought we can actually really reduce ourselves, or by grasping at the inner language. What I find interesting is to notice how we grasp at certain words and how they set a certain kind of reverberation in ourselves. I really like to see the language, the word that triggers us. And there is really some which are really like, some is, one good one is fair, unfair. This is unfair. How do you feel when you think that? It's kind of very interesting. There is this tightening. Or when you think, I am right, you know? It's very interesting. So in a way, noticing, in a way, the reverberation of this kind of thing, of this kind of language. So in a way, the problem is not with the contact, nor with the function, but it's how do we encounter? Can we encounter our experience spaciously? And that's why I think awareness is so important, that we know what is going on, that we accept what is going on, and then we can have a creative engagement and a creative response, and we can, in a way, play with our experience. So I have a little time left, and so now I'd like to look at creative engagement with self. I know, I mean, you might have come to this place for a little while, and you must have heard the Buddhists saying you have no self, and fine, you know, you have a self, you have no self. I think, you know, it doesn't matter too much about that. But what is interesting is how do we engage with that self or that non-self? That to me is what is interesting. And to see that actually this idea of non-self in Buddhism is actually the fact that we are not a fixed entity, but we are a flow of conditions. The flow of inner conditions meeting the outer conditions. And so that is what becomes our relative functioning self. And because my conditions are different from your conditions, then we are different. So in the no-self, we don't become robots. Actually, I think we become more who we are. We discover who we are. But I think with the grasping mechanism, what happened with our selfing, I would say, is that we become stuck to one of the conditions that forms us. Instead of seeing that we are multi-perspectival and we are made of many different conditions, then actually we kind of stuck to just one. So, as I said, you can just kind of, you know, be caught in what I would call one of the mental conditions. You know, and often it's interesting, you do something, kind of you make a mistake, and then you say, I am stupid. So in a way you kind of reduce to, I am stupid. Instead of thinking, I did a stupid thing, and I should learn from this and not do it again. But notice the difference from that. I am stupid means I am stupid all the time, forever after. When actually you come upon condition, and then learning from this condition. Otherwise, when we kind of get reduced to one emotional condition, we just have a certain feeling. And that's why I think it's so important to be aware of the feeling tone and to kind of try to have a creative engagement with feeling tone. Because we have an emotion and we're caught by it. And I remember when I was in Korea, I used to be afraid of the dark. And then we had this kind of all-night meditation for days. And I was so frightened. You know, because at night you had to go to the bathroom outside and there was very little light and it was dark. Because I used to feel that there was this man with a knife. He was going to get me. And so my heart would beat fast. I would be really shaking. And so I went to my teacher and I said, what can I do? I'm afraid of the dark. And he said, come back to your question, which is, what is this? What I'll do this afternoon? So I thought it was like a talisman, like a magical kind of, it would protect me from anything bad out there. So when, you know, I would go in the dark, I would get frightened, and I would say, what is this? What is this? And actually I realized it was not a magical talisman, but in a way it was a gift of the present. I would come back to the present moment. It was 10 o'clock at night, in the middle of nowhere in Korea. Who would be there to want to come and get me? And the fear would just be gone. So in a way, to see, I think this is very important, to not reduce ourselves to just one emotion, but trying to, in a way, creatively encounter it, creatively engage with it. Or we might, in a way, reduce ourselves, grasp at the fact that we are tall or small or thin or whatever. And in a way, we kind of are just that. But we are more than just one physical trait. Or we might, in a way, kind of grasp at a quality, at just a quality of ourselves, like, I am good, I am bad. And I find it very interesting. When you like somebody, you know, you like somebody and you think they're really good, and then somebody comes and say, oh, you know, that person, they did something bad. And you think, no, it's a mistake. They are good. But if there is somebody you don't like, and you think they are bad, you know, and they do some good thing, and somebody say, oh, you saw that guy, he did some really nice things. Say, no, he's always bad. This is a mistake. Don't we do this? So in a way, to see that what we do then is that we grasp at just one quality of that person, of ourselves. And that we cannot reduce ourselves to just one quality because we are never all the time good or bad. It comes upon conditions. So in a way, in that non-grasping, there is very much that creative encounter with the fullness of the person in the moment. Then I think there is to look at creative engagement with people. To me, this is interesting, because often this is one, People who do meditation, who are on the Buddhist path, worry about that. But if I meditate, you know, how can I be in a couple? How can I love somebody? And I would say, actually, if you meditate and if you don't grasp at the person, you actually will be able to love them so much more. Because often what we do is we grasp at the feeling that the person is creating. You know, we feel good. We're with somebody we love, we feel good. And so we want to be with them all the time. At the beginning, when I was married with my husband, I would stick to him. I would sit with him next. I would sit to him at the table, on the sofa. I would kind of follow him like his shadow. So the poor thing, you know. Until I realized, wait a minute. You know, it made him feel hemmed in. And I did not develop any relationship outside of that one. And when I saw that, I said, wait a minute, this is again reducing myself. So then I kind of started to kind of, little space, you know. And then kind of, you know, making my own friend develop also with other relationship. So we have to be careful of, oh, it's such a nice feeling. I want to grasp at it, grasp at the person that helps us to have it. And also what I find interesting sometimes is that actually we love someone, that it be a child, that it be a partner, that it be a friend, but it's a little conditional. I love you, but I would love you more if you were not like this. I like this kind of conditional love, you know? Kind of. And to see that to me, love is when you accept the person fully, with everything that is difficult and beautiful about them. And if you start from that place, then you really can creatively engage with what is difficult. I mean, my husband is English, and I am French, and we have a very different temperament. And we travel, you know, we travel a lot. And I used to notice that we kind of used to have a little kind of, you know, little kind of argument when we travel, especially in airport and catching plane, until I looked at what was going on. And I noticed that when things got a little tense, he would go slower and I would go faster. And I saw, because often we think they do it on purpose. You know, they're obstructive. But no, that was his way to cope with the tension. And my way to cope with tension was to do the opposite. So now I kind of laugh at it. You know, something is a little tense, and I kind of went, see, kind of, you know, backward, me frontward, and then I laugh. And so I slow down a bit, he goes a little faster. And so then that's what I would call by creative engagement, is that you really go in the situation, you really look, what is going on? What is happening? And then you're not so stuck, and then you can creatively kind of engage with what is going on. And so I think my time is up, so I'll finish this, because this is a big subject, we could go on for a long time. But maybe I stop here, and then if there is any question or comment, we have a little time. Yes?
Let's use this microphone. I very much appreciate the practicality of your comments and your teaching this morning. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think that the meditation must have a practical effect on our life. Otherwise, I think we might take up something else, like basketball or I don't know what. It must make a difference. Thank you very much.
And also, as I was listening to your talk, I found myself laughing at myself some, and I think that's practical too.
Yeah. Now, I think this is also an important part of the meditation. It seems to me that, of course, sometimes it is difficult, and we really, you know, have to, it's a little kind of a tension of a struggle. But I think in the meditation, we must, over time, there is this effect of this grasping, and then we can become a little lighter. And to me, that's what I experienced when I was in Korea. That the more the monks and the nun had meditated, the lighter they became, you know. And I remember my teacher was a master cousin, a great master. And one day we were coming back from working in the fields, and we had to cross a river where there were stones, and he was 75. And he crossed the river like he was like a deer, like that. And then he arrived and he turned to me and he laughed, you know. Kind of, there was this lightness. And I think this is important, to bring that quality in our meditation, but also in our life.
Any other questions or comments?
You mentioned that when we are grasping, we might feel overwhelmed at what is happening. So is it true also that every time we feel overwhelmed, we can look for something that we're grasping at?
I would say so.
How can one identify that?
Well, you see, I think at that level, the awareness, you see, I think that's why the awareness meditation is so useful. I think first we have to see, the awareness meditation is not judging. We have to be very careful. We don't have a little policeman or policewoman on our shoulder saying, you know, you're a bad girl, you're a good, you know, boy, or whatever it is. But awareness is this kind of encountering the moment. And I think it is quite, I know the present move all the time, but I think it's very important to kind of go into the moment and to really try to feel ourselves, to not, because often we kind of really caught in the head, and we actually often caught in our stories. I think we have patterns. I think we have emotional, physical, and mental patterns that are easily triggered. We don't always activate them. They don't always manifest, but in certain circumstances, for example, if we're tired, if we not slept well, if we feel busy, there are various conditions that makes us a little less, what I would call, stable. That makes us a little kind of, just a little off balance. Then there is stories, or there is what I would call emotional stream within ourselves. And sometimes something happens, and in a way we get caught. So personally, if I kind of start to feel a little kind of agitated or confused, a little kind of off balance, I generally first look at the feeling tone. I look here. How does it feel here? I don't try to name it necessarily, but just to feel it. Is it at ease? Is it a little agitated? How is it here? Then I look into the mind. What am I telling myself in this moment? And is it true? You know, because sometimes we tell stories which actually have nothing to do with what's going on. It's kind of some old story. And we have to say, is this true? Or is it always true? And also to look in the body, to kind of, you know, we look in the body, what is going on, look a little at the conditions. Once I had a friend, and she phoned me, very upset, you know. Ah, life is terrible, my life is terrible, it's always terrible. Ah, everything is hopeless. And I said to her, what has happened? She said, nothing has happened, it's always terrible. So finally I kind of, what has happened? So finally she said, yesterday, something happened with my daughter at school. Something she was very afraid of in advance anyway. So then we could talk about that. Be specific about what happened. Because I think often we go into this very general, kind of like permanentizing what is going on. And I think that's where then we feel overwhelmed. You have a headache. I will have a headache forever after. I have a problem. I have a problem forever after. So that's why I think it's good to come back to the moment. What is happening in this moment? And then I think then we are less overwhelmed. And we can kind of start to see where we kind of actually, in a way, kind of fixing us or reducing us. Like, I mean, something happened to a friend recently, there was some, she read some, in a way, very negative comment about herself from an anonymous source. And so, because she's also doing meditation, she said, "Oh, I must not reduce myself to the situation they're negative about." And I said, no, that's not the way to look at it. You cannot reduce yourself to something you read in a piece of paper. And again, because this had nothing to do with her, it was what the person thought and kind of, because really I was there and I saw it and really. And so in a way we have to be careful. What is it we're reducing ourselves? And kind of go back and look in the moment.
In the meditation, you gave the instruction about the feeling toward. I've never heard that instruction before. Can you give a little more amplification on what it is?
This is my creative way, or non-orthodox way to deal. Because you see, in the Vipassana tradition, you're told to look at the feeling and noticing pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And personally, I can never find those, you know. I look pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. I can't find it. I can't do it the way they describe one should do it. But what I can notice is my feeling tone. So what I do, but not necessarily everybody has to do that, but that's what works for me basically, is what I do, and I do that also in daily life, is to notice just around here, how does it feel inside? And generally, that's the way I monitor a little what happens to me. If kind of here sometimes it's quite kind of quiet, or sometimes you feel, you know, it's a little fearful, or maybe it's a little off balance, or it's a little agitated. Kind of at the moment, I'm aware that if I think about one thing today, I might meet my Dharma friend I have not seen in 30 years, so I feel a little excited. You know, just to know that kind of energetically, it's kind of more kind of an energetic thing of knowing. How does it feel here? And also what I feel is that in the meditation, we have this kind of what I would call meditation posture, what I would call to be stable and to be open. And what I could try to do is that I am aware of lower down the belly. Am I stable? Am I open? So that actually even if I feel a little agitated here, I am not that affected by it because I'm aware of it because of that. And I can see, it's very interesting because as long as there is this kind of knowing the feeling tone here, feeling the stability here, I'm generally okay and creatively engaged. But then as soon as I get caught in the feeling tone, then kind of in a way I'm gone. Either I'm kind of whatever happened. Then I see, you lost it here. And then back to the stability. So it's very hard for me to express it. It's kind of just a kind of feeling tone here, which I would generally not name, but just kind of know the effect it has on me. And I think we have to stop here, because I'm aware some people want to arrange for the potluck. Also some people might want to go back home. But of course, if some people want to stay a little and we can discuss a little more, we can too here. But just so that people have the opportunity now to get up and do whatever they have to do if they need to.